Just a little bit. But I mean, that's the thing. It's like, I feel like I don't put in my creative input because this is technically Christine's baby, you know? Get Realism is her thing.
Right.
It's all her thing. I'm just along for the ride. She got me along because she knows I have the gift of gab and I can just shoot and bullshit for hours.
Yeah.
I can do it.
Because you make everyone around you so comfortable because you'll just go up and be like, oh, right? Right, you know? It's amazing. That's why I connected with you so quickly because I was looking for one person to just like buddy up with on Dreams because I was like, I don't know anyone. I don't know what's going on, what is happening. And then you're like, hey, I'm Adam.
You're the first young person that wasn't a dick to me too. You know what I mean? Like, well, you're like the first person my age who wasn't like a straight up asshole. Like, every time I talk to somebody who is my age, especially in the beginning, there's people who are like 24, 25, and they don't want to talk to me. They're just like, whatever, man. You know, I don't want to talk to this kid. But like, yeah, when I talked to you, yeah, it was, you were also easy to talk to. Like, you listened, you know, and I'm serious. That's a really rare trait to have. I know it sounds bad, but I mean, I've been in relationships. I even have my sisters who won't listen to fuck anything what I have to say. They're just like, yeah. No worries.
I think that comes from just having like a really close family. When you're used to people not listening, you make a point to listen, you know?
And your family is the most adorable fucking thing I've ever seen in my life, Peyton. Mm-hmm. I love your mom. I love your dad. I love your brother. I mean, I always loved your brother. But, like, seeing him again was so rad. Yeah, I mean, the Brewers are the doers. You know what I mean?
My mom, like, as soon as she met you, found me on set and was like, I love Adam. And I was like, I know, I told you you would. She's like, he's so funny. And he's just like, he doesn't have a stick up his ass. He's not a douche. Like, he's really good at what he does and he makes sure that people are comfortable and taking mm-hmm. care of him. And I was like, I know, and that's why I love him. I know.
I have no pride either. So like, you can make fun of me and I'll probably agree with you.
You're like one of the very few people who made it a point to make people laugh. And I think that's so important when you're on set because when you get sleep deprived, everything irritates you. So when you have someone who's like just trying to make lighten the mood and like make you laugh, it makes
I'm not gonna lie, Peyton, fucking Bennett, he pushed me last day. He pushed. Yeah. I even texted him about it. I was like, Bennett, my guy. I'm like, any other AD? No way. Like, no way. But you, my guy, you're a cool dude.
What did he do?
No, it's not anything he's done. He'll just like shoot like something like sideways at me, and it would be something like small. It'd be like I would reset something, and I would look at him and be like, yeah, I'm gonna reset this thing, and he was like, yeah, and also we're gonna do this thing and this thing and this thing, and I'm like, okay, what has that got to do with me? And he was like, well, absolutely nothing, but I want to let you know so you understand. And I'm like, why? You don't need to give me this information. And then he jabbed right back at me with the whole, like, well, you know what? Then I won't have to tell a art department anything anymore or something like that. He said something.
He has to have someone to pick on. And I think you were that person. He told me that. He was like, I feel bad because I feel like I took it too far.
And that was the thing. Like, I forgot about it because I just went about my day because I knew he wasn't getting any sleep. And I knew you for sure weren't getting any sleep either. So I'm like, you know what? I can't hold it against anyone if they're feeling a little grumpy because I was too. Like, I fucking, like, driving from Austin to Blanco, it was taking a toll, but... I don't know, Peyton. I think this is still one of the most fun sets that I've been on. Like,
I'm glad because now I'm worried. Like, oh my god, what was happening?
No. I mean, well, I've been on commercials that were absolute horseshit, and they paid me better, but they were garbage. Yeah. It's funny where the jobs that I get paid the least from are my most favorite jobs.
Yeah.
It's interesting because working with you was, if I didn't get paid for it, truly, Peyton, if I didn't get anything back from it, I would have done it over again, you know, 100%. 100%. You're inspiring to work with, you're passionate about the art you want to bring and deliver, and you want to make cool shit. And I can't fault you for that. Like, that's rad. Like, you don't hear many people want to do that. You don't see many people who even have the courage to do that. They're like, yeah, maybe one day, but I don't know, maybe in the future. Like, well, I mean, why not now? Like, you have the resources, you can do it.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, I mean, that's one of those things that, like, as it was happening, I was like, I feel so bad because I want to pay everyone more, but, you know, and it's,
yeah,
it's one of those things that I was like, okay, cool. Now that I've done this and you know what this is like, now I can make it better. Now I can really, like, prepare for the financial end a little bit more and, like, make sure everyone feels appreciated, because that is really important to me. And I hate having to tell people, like, I can only do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and that sort of, I don't know, it's there's no other better way of saying it other than inspiring, you know? You've always inspired me, even when we were just a couple of knucklehead PAs on Fugitive Dreams.
Hey, listen.
Maybe I was. You weren't. You were nice.
Exactly.
I was.
Each other. I got to a point
where I was ready to just, like, be like, yo, Jennifer,
peace out.
I'm bouncing.
Yeah.
You know, like, I gotta go.
Yeah.
But I wouldn't, because Christine fought tooth and nail to get me on that set. You know, if Christine didn't fight me to get on that set and I did it all by myself, I would have been like, fuck all this, you know? But because I didn't want to hurt Christine, I had to do everything I possibly can, but man.
It was rough. It really was. And during that time, my puppy was dying, home.
Oh no, that's right.
And so I was just like every day, like, like anything.
So
someone
sorry, to that's right.
And yeah. And I just, like, I almost left, but then April and Robbie were like, please don't leave us. And they were so sincere about it that I was like,
mom,
okay, I can finish it.
April and Robbie were probably, next to you and some of the crew, like, were the nicest people in production. Like, April and Robbie were grade A fucking human beings, you know?
They really were. They're fantastic. And the level of savagery that they served every day was wonderful.
Hey, April, when I picked her up that one time, holy shit, I was like, damn, okay. She's you got funny. A lot to say. All right.
So funny. Yeah. And everything she says, you're like, you're right. You're right. I didn't know how to articulate that, but you do. And you're right.
You nailed it. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. You ready to go live with this bitch?
Yes. Real quick. Did you see the font for the poster?
No.
You need to look after this is over.
Yeah.
It's worth the discussion. I'll just put it.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
Oh God, I'm not. Yeah, I'll let you know when I see it.
Yeah.
I got an email. I haven't checked my emails, but I skimmed by it this morning and I saw, like, a few emails from Jason, and I don't know what that was all about.
It's they got accepted into a festival and they're like all of our social media, it'll help our distribution.
Gotcha. Yeah. And then it got me nervous. I got an email from Michelle too. And I was like, fuck. I'm like, what's happening now?
Yeah.
I'm like, I'm not even working for this bitch anymore. And I'm already in trouble, you know?
I know. Exactly. Exactly.
So I got the email and she was like sending me like links about like the social media shit. But I didn't know it was about social media. She just sent me a random email with like social media, like, attachments to it, like links and stuff. I'm like, what the fuck is this all about?
even in their social media plan, it's yeah. just
it's like, just not good.
No, it's not good at all. Anyway, enough about that. Let's get this party started.
Let's get this show rolling. Okay, let's go into Facebook and
go. Oh my God, it is live? Oh, good grief.
I mean, but here's the thing, Peyton. We average about like 45 to about 80 viewers per episode when it does go live. After it goes live, yeah, we generate like probably about like 200 to 300 people in the span of a week, maybe. Like cool. Last week, we got like about 215 people. That's watching awesome. It. Yeah, but I mean, you know, not saying that you can just say whatever the fuck you want to say, but you know, it's still chill enough that you you know, it's
I'll put on my professional hat. It's okay.
Yeah. Maybe have the professional hat to the side, you know? Just you know, just in case.
Yes, exactly.
But more times than not, I'm usually chill with however the podcast goes. So if you have anything you want to chime in with, Peyton, you go right ahead. You can interrupt me. It's fine.
Okay.
This is open discussion for you and I. This isn't like a formal interview show, you know? And I'm going to tag you too, so you can repost it on your feed if you want.
Okay, good. Thank you.
Yeah, of course. We are saying fuck it, doing it live with Peyton. Sick.
When is Christine done with shooting?
It's a 30-day shoot, and she started, August 3rd. She's done.
Oof.
Yeah.
Is it here in Austin?
No, Brian.
Oof.
Yeah, I know. And I told her, I was like, you're going to spend a month in Brian? And she's like, yeah. And I'm like, how many people are going to be there? And she's like, about like, I think she said like 40 to 50 people, depending on who's going to drop and who's getting, you know, hired and stuff.
Right.
But yeah, I was like, you know, God bless her, but man, it's just, it's scary, you know, to go into a production with that many people. And but the good news is that there's COVID testing literally every single day.
Good.
So she's literally getting tested every day along with the entire cast and crew. So, yeah. Oh my God, we're on episode 11.
Oh, that's fantastic.
That's crazy. At some point, I if you would want to do this podcast again, I would love to get I would love to get Bennett, that dummy, on here.
Yeah, that would be fantastic. That would be so fun.
It'll just be like a writing episode. It'll just be us three just talking about writing and stuff.
Cool. You know? Yeah, that would be awesome.
I
already started working on our next.
Really?
Yes.
Okay, we'll talk about it after the show. We'll talk about it. Okay. We'll talk about it after. Oh, by the way, do you have a time crunch? Do you have to be somewhere at a certain time?
Nope.
Okay, cool. Sick. All right. Okay. Oh, I see. I pressed the wrong button. Oops. All right. Well, once more with feeling, shall we?
Yeah.
All right.
What did you say to that? Do it again, but this time suck less.
Yeah, please, okay? Can you do yourself a favor and not fuck up, okay?
Yeah.
Please put me in, coach. Yeah, dude, I feel like I don't even know what fucking day and year it is anymore. It feels like 2 months, like, went by since, like, 2 days ago, you know?
Know.
It's crazy. Crazy. Oh, snap. We are going live.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. I'm so incredibly nervous.
Please don't be. Don't be. It's all good. And I'm going to start the whole thing, by the way. And I'm going to give you, Peyton, I'm going to give you the best segue.
Oh.
To your introduction.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
That you've ever witnessed in your life.
Oh, I'm ready. Let's go.
I'm kidding. At this point, Peyton, you should lower your expectations.
Well, a girl can dream.
Yeah, exactly.
That should be the
way to set that up.
Lower your expectations.
Always. Mm-hmm. Always. That's that was actually on my Tinder profile for the longest time. At this point, please lower your expectations. I don't want to disappoint you. Okay. Enough being sad. All right. Oh man, we are doing it. We are live here on Facebook. You guys, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Get Realisms podcast. I am Adam Chase Rennie. This is a lovely, lovely Friday, hot Friday afternoon. You guys, I hope everyone is doing good out there. I hope everyone is staying safe out there, staying the fuck away from each other. I hope you're doing all that. You know, just spend time alone. Just doing it. Just you know, be creative and do shit on your own. You know.
Hey-o.
You know what I'm saying? Hey-o. Ladies and gentlemen, I got a very, very special guest. Shall I say a dear friend of mine? A good dear friend of mine. She is a wonderful lady. She is an actress, writer, director. She is phenomenal at what she's done. And I had the absolute pleasure of working with her. You guys, ladies and gentlemen, Peyton Brewer is in the house.
You're going to make
Peyton.
That was so heartfelt. I really appreciate that.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Peyton, thank you again for being on the show. I appreciate you.
Well, it's of so course. Much fun.
So I want to get into your time and your experience with COVID. How have you been doing? I know you're here in Texas, but how's your experience with this?
I mean, honestly, my experience has been kind of a whirlwind. I've had a very busy quarantine experience. It started with my brother having a quarantine wedding at our property. Less than 10 people, everyone social distance. It was great.
Wow.
Yeah. And him and his wife were supposed to get married in Colorado, and they had to cancel it. And they still wanted to keep their wedding date, so they just, we just did it. And my dad's best friend was our preacher, and it was just, you know, it was great. It was fun.
That's so
but
sweet.
But my mom had to do everything, so we had to, like, set the tin and decorate everything and all that stuff. And then I got to escape to my family ranch for about a month, which was awesome. And I got a lot of new story ideas and things like that, which was great. And it was good just to, like, really take a break, especially after our shoot and everything, to just really assess all that had happened. And, you know, spending a lot of time with family, trying to catch up on a lot of acting stuff, like redoing my website. And I started this thing called Monologue Mondays on Instagram, where I just learn a new monologue every week and I do it.
I saw that. I love them. I love your monologues. Yeah.
It's one of those things that, like, now that I started, I'm like in it and I got to keep it going, you know?
Absolutely. So, yeah. But yeah. You're doing it, and you're doing it every, just like how Christine and I, well, I have been doing the podcast every week. Throwing shade at Christine.
She's going to be so happy to see you say that. She's going to be like, thanks, Adam. Way to rep. I only took 1 week off, which was last week, which I was really sad about, that I have made it. This week will be 15 weeks of just
crazy.
And let me tell you, to find that much material to do,
it's never ending, I bet.
Never ending.
Yeah.
Even if you try and block it out, you still get to a monologue and you're like, I don't love it. I gotta switch it.
Like, you're in the shower, you're cooking eggs, you're making food, and you're just like, fuck, I gotta write this, or I gotta do something about this. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So I mean, it's been really great, and it's one of those things that, like, as I look back on it, I can definitely see some of my strengths and weaknesses, which is both, like, empowering and disheartening, and it's great, you know? We're just trying to stay proactive.
No, and you are, you know? And I guess that goes, it's a pretty good segue into my first question, and, I mean, I know you've told me this, and it's a pretty interesting story, but for those of you who don't know, how did you, first getting into the industry, did you know you wanted to act, or was it more or less like you just wanted to be in the industry, whether or not it was directing, writing, or was acting sort of like in the forefront for you?
I mean, I kind of came out of the womb dancing and singing. my grandma said that because my parents and I lived with her when I was first born, and she said that I could sing all of the songs from The Sound of Music before I would speak to anyone. And
no shit, I didn't know that. That's
yeah,
crazy.
I would watch it every day. You know how every kid has their like happy movie?
Yeah.
That was my happy movie. Like a 3-hour melodrama was my happy movie. But, you know, it made my own happy.
What a great choice from none other than a thespian herself. You know what I mean? Like that's such a great, great choice. I never even think about Sound of Music. And now that I think about Sound of Music, I forgot like how pretty and how amazing the music is. Even for its time, I was just like, oh, yeah.
And then, like, you know, when you're one or two or three, you don't know what Nazis are. You don't understand.
Yeah, that's the other part. You don't know.
It wasn't until I was, like, 12, I rewatched it. And I was like, oh, wow, interesting choice, you know?
Right.
But,
strong choices there. Okay.
Exactly. But, and then there was a bunch of personal family things that happened when I was 12. And so my parents pulled me and my younger brother out of school and they homeschooled us. And then the same grandmother that I lived with was like, you used to love to sing and dance. You always said that's what you wanted to do. I'm going to take you to the community theater. And she made me audition, and I got a role in this, like, weird little play. And,
yeah.
And then I was just kind of hooked, like.
Of course. Yeah.
And so I started doing acting classes, and I found my mentor, Joe, who's been teaching me since I was 14. And he's like,
shout out to Joe.
Shout out to Joe, for real. He helped me get into college, and he still teach, like, to this day, he stopped teaching me acting, but he started teaching me stage combat, and he helps me, like, he's helping me achieve my master levels in, like, 6 different weapons and things like that, which is...
Oh, shit! You gotta pop a motherfucker! I love it! I love it! Hell yeah, dude!
You know?
So with acting, and now that you've directed, and now that you've wrote, and how is that experience compared to acting?
Well, it's not that different in terms of the way that you assess character and the atmosphere and, you know, the structure of everything. The analysis is still the same. Where it gets different is that you are in charge of all of these people, and all of these departments come to you, especially like in Sister, I was starring in it and directing it and producing it. So like every second of every day, there was someone who had a question about something. Mm-hmm. And so I think...
Including me.
Yeah, no, it was just fun. Your questions were always my favorite because they were fun. Like, hey, do you want the leaves here or there?
Yeah, right. You know? It's the silliest, most goofy questions. Yeah.
No, but I mean, when you're trying to create a period accurate Western, you need to ask those kind of questions. I was very grateful for their dedication and just like, are you sure? Are we okay? We're good. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, and this is a city boy who you working with. This is a kid from Oakland who don't know shit from shit. So like,
you were so proactive in researching, and you would like.
Yeah.
I remember when we were locating. Oh my gosh.
Buggy Barn. Yeah.
Yeah. Buggy Barn, and the whole drive, you were like, okay, so I researched this, and da-da-da-da-da, what about this? What about that? And it was so great. I'm so grateful that we had those, I don't know, 4.5 hours total, or yeah, however long it was, to really go through and dissect, well, this would be this way because of this, or yeah, traditionally it was this way, but maybe it would be this way because we're mixing cultures and, you know, things like
and that's,
that.
And that's, I mean, that was one of the... Now, that was one of the many things why I loved working with you. Not only that you had the passion for what the period and how accurate the period should be, but how well you collaborated in terms of, like, you were open to ideas and you were, I mean, well, like I said from the very beginning, you were willing to listen. You know, you're willing to just understand, you know, like, if I had an idea or if I had a thought or a theory, I can shoot it to you and you're like, yeah, let's do it. Like, yeah, I love that idea. Or, you know, so it felt like free reign, but limited free reign, if that makes sense. You know what I mean? Structured free reign. Yeah. And it was inspiring because it kind of opened more doors for me and more possibilities than I ever even think of. And I only did set dressing jobs, you know? And the fact that you were willing to trust me with an art direction job, I'm like, oh my God, there's so much more shit. And I love every second of it because every minute like counted as an experience for me, even the fuck ups. Like, and let me tell you, you see my fuck ups. I've learned from all of them and I wouldn't have taken it back. So yeah, I mean, long-winded way for me to say thank you.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, it was so amazing for me to be able to just, there were several times on set where I would step back and just watch everyone. And it was wonderful. Like when you choose people and you trust them implicitly and you're like, yes, you got it. Because you've had enough meetings to establish the world. And then you're like, kind of like drawing the lines. And now you're like, okay, now you color it. And let's see what happens.
Yes. Yes. That's exactly how it feels. Yeah.
Yeah. It was amazing. And like, just even the campfire scene was so lived in.
Yeah.
It was a pain to already, but once it was ready, it was just
magic.
That was probably the most like lived in realistic scene in my opinion, because it just seemed so organic.
And let me tell you something, Peyton, like seeing it like in the DIT table afterwards was fucking awesome too. Yeah. Like just seeing it play back again, I'm like, fuck, we did that. Like, that's nuts. Like, that's crazy. It's fun.
It all worked because nothing looked out of place. Everyone looked very comfortable. Even just like watching the fire flicker in the frame was just like, oh, this is so good, you know?
Yeah. And we were so, for those of you who don't know, like, we're so tightly packed that you would think like in a campfire scene, it's spacious, we're farther out. We filmed so tight. It was close. We were so bottlenecked that we were hugging each other damn near the entire time, you know?
Having to, Christine was so genius. She started putting like Walmart sacks on trees so people knew not to hit their heads on limbs because all the overhang was, I mean.
People were knocking their domes. Yeah, they were.
Like bare minimum personnel could be on that particular.
I know I killed a few brain cells for sure with how many times I hit my head on those low hanging branches.
How could you not? And just the smoke ventilation alone for doing that for like 4 hours, you know?
So just us like getting back to base camp, we're all just like lethargic and like kind of like delirious.
Exactly. I was just like so thankful that Paula was like, why are we trying to do this? Let's build a real fire. I'll do it. Let's go. And I was like, yeah. Oh my God. There was no way we could have lit that to replicate a fire.
Yeah.
And it was that good. It just wouldn't have happened, you know?
I am curious. I never asked you how long, I might have asked you, I don't know. How long did it take you to write the script for Sisters?
So back in January, I had gone to LA.
Right.
I know a lot of people say, but I'm 99% sure I got COVID. Because I was on an airplane with my younger brother, and 2 weeks later, I just got, like, felt like I hit a brick wall. Couldn't move, couldn't get out of bed. I had the worst cough. I had a fever. Like, I couldn't do anything. And I was like, I don't understand what's going on. So I went to the doctor. They were like, they tested me for the flu. And this was before COVID had hit the U.S.
Right.
It was acknowledged that it hit.
Detrimental.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so my flu test came back negative. And he was like, I think it's just a severe sinus infection. I get sinus infections like 3 times a year.
That was you knew better. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And my little brother kept joking, like, what if you have COVID? Oh, I think you have COVID. Well, he got sick too, and he got the exact same thing. And it took a solid month for me to feel normal again.
Get rid of the symptoms? Wow. Yeah.
And then the very next week after my flu test, there were like all of these headlines and things saying like, COVID has hit LA, confirmed case. And I was like, oh, great.
Oh, well, fuck. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, while I was like sick, I had planned to go on all these auditions because it was pilot season and I'm just like ready to go. That just didn't happen. So I was like, well, I'm just gonna write something and see what happens. And it ended up being Sister, and it took me the whole time I was sick, so about a month to write it. And then Bennett and I chopped it, as you know.
Of course. Like yeah.
Before we started filming.
Right.
Just to really solidify it. But yeah, Yeah.
That's crazy. That's awesome though. I didn't know you had the script already, like you had it written when you were in LA. I thought you had it written when you came back to Texas. And then that's when you reached out to all of us to help you out. But that's awesome. It felt like destiny, just sort of just kind of like landing itself. And then that idea just kind of inadvertently kind of seeped into your brain. And then you sort of like worked the wheel, and then you got a fantastic script out of it, dude, you know? So, yeah.
I was so worried about playing into racial stereotypes and gender stereotypes and things like that as I was writing it. And so I really tried to strip all of that away and just make it about universal themes of like, what was it like being a woman in 1865? Okay, what would that entail? How would they react? What would they be feeling? And just tried to build it off of that instead of, you know, focusing on the superficial aspects of it, you know?
Right, because the story is what matters in the end. Yeah, I believe. And, you know, it's funny you mention that because I, writing my script, because I'm writing... the script that I'm writing is a character who is someone who I don't know, you know, like I'm writing about two war veterans who are Hispanic American, female war veterans, you know, and it's interesting to write something that is not who you are or what you think about at all, you know? And yeah, I do get that feeling where I'm like, is it even appropriate for me to write this? Is this even like, is it right for me to do this? But after reading your script, it almost sort of like opened up that boundary for me and lowered that inhibition for me to know that like, yeah, but what's your story though? That's what matters the most. Like if you're just writing this just to write for the sake of race or X, Y, and Z, then I think there's where the message is wrong a little bit, you know, where as long as you have that story to back it up. And I mean, Sister is a wonderful story. I mean, it's to the point where like that would be something I would choose to watch if I didn't know any better on Netflix. You know what I mean? Like if I wanted a good period piece, that would be something, you know, and I don't know, like writing outside of your comfort zone could probably be the best type of writing you could ever possibly get, you know? Absolutely.
Yeah. And I mean the whole time, so, Tara, our other female lead who is
wonderful. She's awesome too.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
Blew me out of the water. And so I met her last summer in London at a acting workshop. And I was like, where are you from? Because we were both American. She goes, Texas. I was like, me too. And so we were like instantly, you know, joined.
That's when you know it's a tiny ass world. When it's like, are you fucking serious? We're halfway around the world and someone from Texas is here? Like, come on, give me a break.
So we just became really close and 2 weeks in basically actor boot camp together. So we were, you know, bonded. And I wrote Aurelia's character with her in mind. And so from the beginning, I was like, I have this project. Will you please read this character? Please tell me if there's anything at all that is offensive or useless or, you know, anything that makes you uncomfortable. I really want to tailor this character to you. And so she was really, she was a great guiding post for me she was very honest and like, hey, this is great, but maybe lose this or, you know, something like that, which was invaluable.
Yeah. And to have the two, like I said, going back to the collaborative experience, you seek that from everyone, you know, that's something to be treasured for sure, you know, and the fact that you were willing to, you know, bend it to and write it for specifically for her voice is I don't think a lot of writers would even have that in mind, because when you a lot of times when you're writing, you have the character, but you don't really have who is going to be the vox to this, the vox populi of these characters, you know? So, but for you to have that already in your mind, like that's pretty rad, because I've like, even me writing this script, like I've, I don't even know where to begin. I can't even finish this bitch. So like, what am I to say? You know?
Exactly. Yeah. Well, I mean, this whole project even started because I wrote this limited series that is a Western. And I just wanted to know.
This was the series you were telling me about when we were working together in Fugitive, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's basically about my ancestor who's from East Texas, and he tried to overthrow Sam Houston to become the president of Texas. And he created his own army, and his wife was like the brains behind the whole operation. She drew all of his battle plans. She spied for him. She was the spider.
Is that still a thing? Like, are you still okay. I'm like, I want to see that. What the fuck? Like, hang on. Is this a thing? Like, we got to.
Yeah.
Let's do it tomorrow.
I know, right? So I just was like, because I ever loved, I grew up around Westerns, but I didn't have a connection to them really. And then I wrote the story, the TV show. And then I was like, I need to figure out like what all of this entails. Mm-hmm. Then I wrote Sister to kind of dabble into that genre to get an idea of what all is involved with that. So yeah, Sister was really, just like a experiment, like, okay, let's just figure out what's happening.
Yeah. And I mean, I feel like you nailed the experiment. I don't know, you're the better judge of yourself than I am, but yeah, I mean, that experience alone was absolutely like phenomenal. And the fact that I was around people our age, you know, that's what was also rad about it. Like, it was mostly young people, aside from maybe Christine and your family, of course. But yeah.
I mean, everyone was, besides like, you know, Leonard and Paula and things like that, everyone was.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which is very, you know, not that that was necessarily a tactic. It was just. Just happened that way, you know.
But how the pieces fell, and it just so happened that like majority of the set were all a bunch of kiddos, you know.
Yeah. Which made it great, because everyone was like, "Oh my god, I can let loose! There's no one telling me what to do. This is awesome!" You know.
It felt like summer camp. It felt like summer camp. Yeah.
No, it was so much fun. And it made me happy that for the most part, everyone really loved each other. And that is very rare in itself for people to walk away and be like, wow, I feel like I'm friends with these
people. Yeah, I will work with any of them. Even I hit up Yvette too, you know, because someone needed hair and makeup, you know, and I'm like, oh girl, I got you, you know, like, yeah, we all generally loved each other on that set, even if it was silent and we just didn't say a fucking word to each other at some point, we still, when we're working, you know, and at least we knew when we were working, we could have just fooled around the entire fucking time, but yeah, like,
and that was what was so
no way.
About it was like, everyone was a professional to their core. No one was wasting anyone's time. When it was time to work, it was time to work, period. But within that, we were able to have a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, within our means, absolutely. But yeah, that was an absolute fun experience. There's something else I was going to say, and I completely forgot, but probably not important. So you are writing something else now, or are you taking a break from writing, or are you going back to the TV show?
Well, the TV show I'm always working on because it's such
a... That's going to be a never-ending thing. Yeah.
Exactly. I mean, there are like 50 different storylines and it's crazy. But I did revise that at the beginning of the summer and resubmitted the script to Austin Film Festival. So last year I submitted the script, which was 20 pages over industry standard. And I made second round with it, which was awesome.
Wow.
And that
you
was
wrote too much story?
I did. I did. But that was really cool because that was the first time I had ever submitted anything. Uh-huh. And they ended up saying that I beat out over like 11,000 people or something to make second round, which was like, what? You know?
I know, that's wild. Yeah.
Yeah. So I chopped it down a little bit more and then got it down to 55 pages now, which is industry standard, which is great. And so I resubmitted that. So we'll see what happens. I won't find out till September, I think.
Nice. Hell yeah.
The boys and I are, we have a couple projects in the works that we're hoping, if everything goes well with COVID, that we can film with a micro crew. So, and then our goal is to film another feature in the beginning of next year, around the same time we film Sister.
Really?
Yeah.
Ah!
Yeah!
Well, you know, there's a little birdie named Adam who doesn't mind.
We don't, that's not even a question anymore. Like, you have to do it. There's no choice.
I'm excited. No, I'm excited. I mean, like, I've been itching to work again, you know, and I even texted, I was talking to Kelly about this and we were like, it might've been Christine too, but we were talking about how like, we're never like movies are always just forever going to be a thing no matter what, because I had this weird, I don't know. It's like that pessimistic side of my brain that I'm trying to push back at all costs. But sometimes it just comes back up now and again. It'll be like, dude, are you going to be in the film industry after this? Like, I who knows? And when I voice that, it's almost like, it almost sounds like psychotic in a way, because it was like, hang on, you understand that movies are always going to be a thing. We're always, there's nothing going to stop us from making the shit that we want to make. Like that's never going to prevent us from doing the things that we love, you know? Now, is it going to be reduced film crew? Probably. COVID testing every day, thermal testing, laser beam in the forehead. Yeah, you know, but it is what it is. And if that means I would have to do that and we can still get our dope shit art like out in the open, so be it. Like, I mean, you know, I'd rather spend the money, have the safety while still making that cool ass shit.
Right. You know? I mean, it's a small price to pay, honestly. And it's one of those that like probably should be happening anyway without COVID. Like there should always be an on-site medic who's testing people for like the flu or, you know, something like that. So I think that we, especially living where we live, Texas is very much like, you're not going to stop us, not in our state, da 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 da, which has its pros and cons depending on who you are and what you do.
yeah, that's true.
You know, but I think what is good about that is that there are so many people who are trying to figure out, like, how do we do this in a way that keeps everyone safe?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, the safety should be the priority of most cases in any set, almost every, in fact, every set should always ensure safety no matter what. Yeah. But that being said, like, you know, things just happen and X, Y, and Z, well, we don't have enough money for this, whatever. And that's also another good lesson for everyone. Ask questions, especially when you get offered a film set. You're not an asshole if you ask questions, you know, like if, like I got asked this one set from a guy who I haven't worked with since like the first like couple of PA jobs that I got from the very beginning. And I've worked with him since. And he asked me to do this short film with him that he's shooting in Dallas. Mm-hmm. And I told him, yeah, but like, what's the set all about? You know, like how big's the budget? And he needed a PA. And I'm like, and it's paid. I'm like, great. But like, what's everything going to be? And he's like, well, there's not going to be a COVID safety thing. Like face masks, we're going to wear face masks and stuff, but like, you probably, you know, we're just going to assume you got tested and stuff. And I'm like, hang on, wait a second. So we're just going to assume other people are tested. They're not going to provide proof or anything like that. And he's like, well, we can't force them to provide proof. And I'm just like, okay, well, I think I'm good. Like, I mean, sorry. Can't, you know?
Right. It's very different if you're in like pre-pro or even post-production and you are social distancing and there's only like five people. Like, that is different. And I can understand being like, you know, just take care of yourself, be responsible, don't come in if you're sick, da 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 da.
Right.
But if you're talking about 20 to 80 people this close to each other all the time, and you can't guarantee that people will keep their masks on or wash their hands or, you know, tell you when they're feeling sick.
And the other thing,
it's the summer. It's 110 degrees outside. And you're going to tell me that G&E is going to walk around with this, like, you know.
Face mask?
Yeah. No. Are you kidding? No.
Yeah. And it, like a 6-day shoot, you know, in Dallas in this weather, it just, it doesn't. That also was another testament to like, do I want to do this for the sake of money or do I want to do this for the sake of being miserable? Like, what do I really want here?
And you also have to consider, like, when you met this person, you are a much different artist and professional than you are now.
Oh, 100%. Yeah. He didn't even know that I was in art department. Like, I told him, I'm like, hey, do you have, like, you know, art department position? He was like, what? I don't know you do that. I'm like, okay, well, never mind. You know?
Just get you coffee and, like, you know, exactly.
And yeah.
That was a really smart move on your part for multiple reasons. So good on you.
Yeah. I'm glad I made the decision, but it's always one of those things where it's like, you know, if you say no, like I inherently feel guilty every time I say no. That's just a natural thing I have in my body. I can't get rid of that. Some people have it, some people don't. And the people who don't, God bless you. You know, I don't know. Godspeed. If you never feel guilty in your life, man, like, what a life, right? So yeah, when I say no, I inherently feel like, well, I don't know if I just made the right decision. You know, maybe this guy won't call me, or he'll probably tell other people like, hey, this guy won't follow up. He's not a trustworthy dude, you know, but that's the thing. Like, my brain just automatically goes to the worst case fucking scenario when, you know, all you need to do is just, well, first breathe and consider the following, like, just understand, like, there's an amalgamation of situations and circumstances that happen. If you say no in one specific job, it's not a detriment per se, but it is a fact. If you do turn down a whole bunch of jobs, that's a different story. But
that's important as you evolve in your business, is you have to, at a certain point, start to teach people how to treat you. So if you say, I take everything, doesn't matter what it is, you're essentially just wearing a sign on your forehead that says, walk all over me. You know, you have to really commit to, like, what is it that you want? What do you see yourself doing? What do you love to do? And not be apologetic about that. You know?
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing. It's like, that's that fine line where it's not being selfish if it's something you are passionate about. You know, if it's something that makes you feel like you have worth for yourself, fucking do it, you know? And the fact that, you know, guilt has to be a consideration in it sort of sucks. you know, because it's defeating. You don't know if somebody doesn't communicate to you. That's even worse. You know, like if they just don't communicate how they're feeling and if they even feel ill about it, it's just like, you're not going to say shit. Come on. You know, it's just as bad as somebody saying like, oh, I'm not sick. And you're fucking coughing all over the place. Like, are you kidding me right now? Like your nose is running and you look like you're about to pass out. Like, exactly. What are you doing?
Exactly. Yeah. It is a fine line because you don't want to bring any ego to your job or to the set. You don't want to be the person that's like, everything that I say is gold and da 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 da.
And I know you've seen some ego on sets. I know you have, Peyton. Yeah. I know it. <You're so cute.
laughs> We both have. And there's just no one is more undesirable than the person who thinks that they are God, you know? And it's not a pretty color on anyone.
It's not. And that's the worst of, those are the worst people, right? Who are very self-righteous and they think, you know, they think that they're cock of the walk and they understand everything from A to Z, especially those directors, those nitwit directors that we've worked with, you know, who feel like they know everything and lo and behold, they don't, you know, you not only look stupid, but you lose all of that respect, you know, like you really look like an idiot, if yeah. anything, you yeah. know?
I mean, as we have experienced, once that happens, everything becomes directionless because there's no one at the forefront saying, this is what we believe in. These are our morals. This is mm-hmm. how we treat everyone. This is our vision. This is our goal. Normally it should fall on the director to be like the, hey, this is the way that this is going to work. Mm-hmm. And if you are a first time director, it's okay to not know everything. And it's okay to say, I really don't know.
Yeah.
Can you explain it to me? Could you walk me through it so I have a better understanding of this versus being like insecure about it and just being like, no, I know. Yeah, no. Yeah, we're going to do it this way. And it doesn't make any sense.
Just being a straight up asshole and be like, I don't care what you think. We're going to do it my way. You know, and I can't respect those people either. I'm just like, oh, you were just not going to even listen to me? Then why am I fucking here? Like, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
It's a lot, but I mean, now with COVID, I feel like we can weed out the shitheads to make room for the dope people. You know what I mean? Like the filmmakers who actually want to create the art and exhibit the art rather than just be like, this is mine and mine alone and I can only do this and I'm not going to share it with anybody, you know? And if that's going to be the case, you can do it all by yourself. That's possible. Don't hire people who you're willing to not collaborate with, you know? So it goes hand in hand. And now more than ever, people need to work and people are freaking out. I mean, look at Los Angeles. It's still like shut down. I had Roxy on the show last week and she's hair and makeup. She's living in LA right now. And she's like, yeah, it's kind of a shit show here. Like it's not any better than Texas or New York or anywhere really, you know? So we're all just trying to survive, but coming out of this, we're going to really understand who we love to work with versus who we just cannot stand and we cannot waste our time with, you know? Right.
Well, I'd love to hear your opinion on something because Bennett and Charlie and I were talking about this yesterday. Do you think that the relationship between the director and the first AD has to be charged with tension?
Has to be charged with tension?
Yeah. Like, do you think that if a director and first AD are like, have a great relationship and are really calm and communicate their ideas clearly and respectfully, do you think that is like the goal? Or do you think that because it is more common to see a director and first AD yell down each other's throats that you know what I mean?
Yeah, well, I feel like, I don't know. I feel like directors in the 80s, what's the one thing they argue the most? Schedule. They argue schedule. Every time I'm around a director and a first AD, they always argue about like timing of everything. But I've also seen directors who work with their ADs so well to the point, like Christine, I worked on a pilot with Christine called Do Better. DoBetter.tv, available now. First season, all available. Plug. Shout out to Amy Darbo, who created the show, and Christine Chen. But they had, like, it's different because Christine had her relationship with the first AD, but she worked with her first AD on so many sets. Like, every set. But the most interesting dynamic they had was they barely communicated with each other. They barely communicated with each other and they knew exactly, and they were on the same wave where like they just, that to me is like the mind blowing goal. You know what I mean? Where you can get to that point where you can just like by manifesting your mind to their mind and know exactly what they're thinking about and they can nail it by all means. But, yeah, I don't know. That's an interesting question, though. Like,
Okay, and part two of this question.
Yeah.
Is how do you feel about the director and DP relationship?
Now, this is where it gets interesting. Because this is a testament if the director is an asshole or not. Even the DP, too. Even the DP. It's a testament. Because if the DP goes to, or if the director goes to the DP and tells them about frames and scales and lenses and all this shit, and they don't know what the fuck they're saying to the DP, there's going to be no respect given from the DP. But there's also no shame in going to the DP and saying, hey man, like, I have no fucking idea, like, the difference between, like, lenses and stuff. Like, I assume, like, you know, you will help me out with all this. It's sort of like a collaborative effort. And, you know, you work with your DP that's the bottom line is communication. That's just the underlying thing is like, as long as you can communicate and the relationship should always be collaborative. Like you. You know, like you just have to see them halfway as long as they can see you halfway. Now, if they're not going to see you halfway, that's their problem.
Right. Well, I mean, I feel like more common to see the DP trying to direct and the director trying to be the DP.
I see that too. Yeah. I see that too.
I feel like there's no clear line of like, not all the time, of course, but a lot of the time, there's not a clear boundary of like, this is what I do, this is what you do, this is what we do together.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah. And I also don't feel like crossing departments and teaching someone else. Like, I've seen a DP teach. Oh, man. Yeah. You're not going to like this, Peyton. I just strap it. I've seen a DP teach, like, how to emotionally engage a specific line of dialogue to talent before. Ooh. Yeah. I've seen that. And when I see that shit, I literally beelined out the door. Like, I'm like, I can't be here.
That's like an atomic bomb going off. Why would you do that? Yeah.
I'm just like, oh, I can't be here. I can't be here. Like,
unless the agreement is like, I mean, because the ideal scenario would be to have a DP that you trust implicitly. So like if you're not on set to handle this specific moment, you trust that person to step in and cover it. That I can understand. But if someone goes behind your back to say, hey, I'm not getting this on camera, do it this way, don't listen to him or her, it's like,
ooh. No. Ooh. No. Especially when there's too many cooks in the kitchen and you get the DP telling you one thing, then you get the director telling you the other thing, and then the director's telling you how to act and shit, and it's just like,
and the actor,
everyone is wrong.
You, everyone's yelling, and that's awful. That is not conducive to creativity.
No, because mom and dad are yelling and no one's agreeing to anything, you know? Like, who can get anything done? No one. So, I don't know. Like, yeah, that's an interesting... It's an interesting dynamic, you know, the director in relation to, you know, someone like a DP or an AD. Like, I don't know, man. Like, I wish, like, and I mean, I haven't directed anything in my life, clearly, but I've definitely seen good directors, and I've definitely seen, like, I've definitely worked with directors who are just not willing to budge, just not willing to creatively budge, you know?
So what is the mark of a bad director to you, in your experience? Like, what if a bad director?
Well, first off, I love how you are taking control of the show. I dig it. I dig it. I respect it, and I love you for it. Bad director is, bottom line is communication. Like, if you're not, I mean, directing to me is no different. I worked retail for almost 10 years, and being a director is almost like being a store manager of a store. And when you're a store manager, you're sort of the host. And directing, you're sort of the host. You're collaborating with everyone, and everyone needs to get along with each other on the same page and effectively communicate on all means. Being like, if the communication is not going on in the crew or talent or anywhere, well, look higher up, see where the disconnect is actually going towards. And quite often you surprise yourself, and it's more times than not the director who sets the atmosphere from the get-go. You have to put your best foot forward. And the worst directors that I've worked with have, one, not communicate, two, never budge creatively, and never seek compromise at all. So compromising is, to some directors, death of art. And to me, that's improvement of art, if anything.
Right.
Compromise, because that's why you hired the crew in the first place, right? Like, you hire an actor who you have in mind to play a character, and that actor can engage the character's emotional state perfect to a T. There's that they're doing their job. So why do you have to teach them how to engage their own character? You hired them in the first place. Don't teach them how to act. You hired them how to act. If you're teaching them how to act, you can act this bitch. Why are you hiring them to do it? You know, you can do this bit yourself. So that being said, like, I do believe, like, those are the fundamental differences between, like, a good director and a bad director, because I definitely think that, like, the shitty directors are often ones who never communicate, and they often think their vision is more important than anyone else's vision. And that's where you lose me. You lose me. Like, I can't work with somebody who isn't willing to work. And that's the other thing too. Like, sometimes you'll work with an AD who's straight up asshole. And sometimes it is. It just happens that way. But what are you going to do as a director to fix that? What are you going to, are you just going to let that slide? The DP is overbearing you, and he is now directing scenes, and you're not. You're now taking the back seat. You're not engaging anyone at all. Now the DP is directing the scene. Like, that doesn't make sense. Now they're listening to the DP. So they can't respect you if they can't engage with you.
Yeah.
And that's a zinger of a question, Peyton. Coming from left field, sharp shooting in a cornfield.
Oh, don't worry.
Boo.
No worries.
But I truly, like, I do think, and now that I've worked X amount of sets, it's interesting, because in the very beginning, like, if I was asked that question, it would have been a completely different answer, because I wouldn't have fucking known. But it's crazy to know that like 2 years ago, I was just a baby little PA, you know, who was just trying not to get in Christine's way while inherently getting in Christine's way. So, you know, you learn, you adapt and you grow. And Christine to me, and I know I do this all the time and Christine fucking hates it, but Christine set a precedent for me in terms of how I am and how I want to be as a filmmaker.
Yep. Me too. Me too. The way that she conducts herself.
Yeah.
On a set, with so much poise, but just clear vision.
Yeah.
However, she's the nicest person. She will talk to a stranger just to make them comfortable.
Absolutely.
And even if she's getting just like squashed down from the higher officer or whatever, she never takes it out on other people, ever. That is such a gift. Most people don't know what that means, you know?
And that's the thing. And especially like Christine also taught me to not wear your heart on your sleeves. And I'm definitely a little sensitive teddy bear myself. And Kelly too, you know, them both, they were like, listen, like this is kind of a cutthroat business, dude. Like, you can't take it personally. Someone's yelling at you, you know, someone's yelling at you on a film set. It's not that they hate you for the rest of your life. It's just, they need you to get the fuck out of the way, you know, or whatever the situation was, you know, and for the situation to even happen, like if you make a mistake, just own it. Like, it is what it is and acknowledge it, apologize if you have to and move on, you know? And they really taught me the value of respecting everyone around you, even though you feel like the respect isn't being given to you, if that makes any sense. But it's also not innate to be a doormat either. Like you should never be a doormat for everyone to just walk all over you. You should be giving respect to a certain extent. Somebody's just being an asshole to be an asshole. Don't fucking talk to them. Period. You know?
Well, I mean, it's so interesting to hear you talk about this because apart from Fugitive Dreams and Sister, I haven't had any crew positions on any kind of film set. So when you come in as an actor, you're used to like getting the special treatment and like everything is like, hey, are you comfortable? Are you good? Great. Everything's soothing tones.
Yeah.
And everything. Hey, we're running a little behind, but we'll let you know when we're ready, you know, that kind of thing. And so you don't experience, even though it is still a cutthroat business, most of the time, if someone's yelling at you on set, you're like, bye-bye. You know, it's just a different kind of like set of manners. And, you know, even like, I think it's interesting what you think the mark of a bad director is coming from a crew perspective. Because from like an actor perspective, for me, the thing I hate most is a lack of specificity. Like if
great answer. Oh, I should have chose that answer. That's such a good answer. God damn it. Way to take it from me. How dare you?
Fine. It's okay.
So
well, it's true. If you don't know the world that you created, what am I supposed to do? I also more than anything, I hate it. When, you know, when you do like the first setup shot and not the, like the filmed rehearsal, but it's like the first, let's go, you know, and you do it. And as an actor, like you're being rushed to this place to sit down to go. It's really chaotic. You're not fully lived in this person. And so you do your scene and they're like, great, that's good. Moving on.
Yeah, and you get nothing. You just like, hey, great, okay, we're moving on now. And it's like, was that good? Did I do a good job? Well, you know.
Yeah, it's like, how could you possibly have gotten what you want? Now, I do believe, like, if you're working with people for, like, 30 days and you're on day 28 and you do it the first time, that's different because you're in the rhythm. If it's the first day, the first scene, the first take, and you do that, they're like, that's great. It's like, Or where they're like, okay, let's reset. And you're like, do you have any notes for me? No, that was great.
No, just do it again. Let's just do it again. I was like, oh, okay.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. You know?
And I can only imagine, because I never acted, so I can only imagine that has to feel defeating. Like, that has to feel like sort of like, okay, so we're just like, you have nothing to tell me, like, at all. Not saying, like, the director has to yell at you and be like, fucking do better. Not that. It's just like, hey, maybe this next time, like, you know, do it this way or that way or something. You know, it's just to give nothing.
Even sort to of, come up and say, hey, keep in mind, this person comes from this background.
Right.
This happened to this person so that they even that clarity can be enough to just be like, you're right. Yep, that was great. Now I'm here, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And so for you, does it, and I guess it's the same question that applies to you, like, for a good director to you, like, is a good director for you more engaging with its talent and crew rather than, you know, the opposite where it's just like, you know, they just sort of like take the back seat and they just sort of like let the winds kind of carry the set wherever it goes, you know?
I started in theater, right? I actually have very little film experience if you compare the two. So I'm used to stepping up on a stage and being told to do it 15 times and that it's still not good enough. I'm used to that kind of boot camp. And so when I don't get that, I'm like, sure?
Something's wrong.
Yeah. My voice wasn't grounded. My posture wasn't right. My face was too expressive. Da-da-da-da-da. You go into all these technical terms. Mm-hmm. Because you have to perform on a stage where 200 people can hear you. So not that it had, I understand that there isn't the time for that on a film.
Yeah.
But I like someone who is not mean or anything like that. It gives me a run for my money and challenges what I think about this world. I just think that's so much more beneficial to your growth than someone who's like, yeah, great, yeah, you know.
Yeah, and you can match each other on the same wavelength in terms of like how that character is developing, because if you can articulately express how the character is through the script or meetings or whatever it is, if you can engage it, there should be no rhyme or reason that both the talent and the director will be on the same wavelength. And that probably goes for most departments if you know what you're doing.
Yeah.
Now, that being said, not a lot of times you know what you're doing. And there's no defeat in that, but as long as you're willing to admit that and willing to work around it and work with them, I feel like the sky's the limit at that point, you know, like if you can work with somebody, and that's why like it's so crucial for people to work at a job where they have to report to a boss. And I know it sounds stupid, but it's one of those remarkable traits that you can get if you do it early, where you can deliver results to a boss that they expect results from. Yeah. And nothing is more defeating when you deliver results and they're not what the expectations are. Yeah. And I failed as a manager. I failed as an associate. I definitely failed. Even working art department, I've failed in a amalgamation of reasons, but most of the time when I do fail, I will be definitely harsh on myself, but what I do more than anything is I remember it, like it's almost like seared into my brain where it's almost like I'll dream about it that night, and it'll like replay like Memento, you know, it'll just keep going. And I know that I won't fuck up like I did at that moment, you know? So working in a job and reporting to somebody and understanding their needs and following up with them and communicating effectively, there's no reason to fail. Effective communication is everything. It truly is everything and anything. Because if you cannot communicate to your own people on a film set, you can't run a business.
Nope.
You can't.
No. And, no. And I think a lot of people forget that it is a business at the end of the day. Even though it's kind of like a gypsy-like business, no one stays in the
same. It is. Yeah.
You know, but I also think, which I'm sure you would agree with, if you have a boss you're reporting to that is not competent, it's almost like why am I even doing this? I might as well.
Yeah, you want to quit.
Yeah. Not that there aren't things to learn from those people, because there always are, but it's one of those things, like for me, if I'm around someone like that, I'm like, I could do it better myself. Just let me do it by myself, you know?
Exactly. Yeah. Always. 100%. And that's the thing. It's like, that's what retail taught me a lot as well, is to work with other people. Because when I first got into retail, I was just a fat, anxious kid who just wanted to play video games all day. You know, I don't want to work with anybody. It's like, no, I mean, you know, like I'd rather just be by myself and be aloof on my own. You know, I was a box boy starting off. And then once I started becoming an associate and realized that it's not difficult to talk to people and to understand people and also listen to people, it's really, in the grand scheme of things, is not difficult at all. And as long as you can attain those goals every time you come into work for 4 hours, 5 hours, 8 hours,
8 hours. You,
on a film set, hours don't become hours, it just becomes time, you know what I mean? It's just like, I think I've been here for like a day or two, I don't know, I think I stood in one spot.
The time the sun comes up and goes down, you're like, okay,
right, exactly. And we've been on those film sets where we walk into set and it's nighttime, and we walk out and it's still nighttime, you know, the next day.
Yeah.
That's fucking weird. That is.
Don't know excruciating like sleep deprivation until you've done that, you know? And the worst part is when you go to bed and you know, oh, I got to be up in like 30 minutes or an hour and a half or 2 hours or maybe 4 hours.
And let me tell you something. Another thing a job has taught me is that if you got a job and you have work that next day, do not, by any stretch of the meat, even if your body just can't do it, do not stay up until like 3, 4 a.m., you know, like doing whatever, whether it's working, playing video games, watching a movie, doesn't matter. Just go to bed, like just lay your head down. Even if sometimes I just won't sleep and I'll just like eventually go to sleep because my brain is just like constantly working. I can't do anything if I have work the day before, because I definitely overslept my alarm and I definitely been late many, many, many times. And I've almost gotten fired twice for being late severely. I was late to my work once, 3.5 hours late.
Wow.
Because I overslept my alarm.
I remember one day on the Fugitive Dream set, because I was the talent.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I picked everyone up and dropped everyone off and everything like that, which in Austin adds like, you know, an hour and a half. No, probably closer to 3 hours total.
I was going to say, I'm like, there's no way. That's like, that's a long time. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I remember I can't do that. Like, I've never overslept an alarm, because when I'm working, I get these like anxiety dreams that are so full of tension that I wake up like every 30 minutes to make sure that I'm not oversleeping, you know? And there was one day I was so tired. I showed up to talent place at 5 o'clock in the morning because I misread the call sheet the next day and not that day. And I could have slept 3 more hours. But they were like, well, since you're up, just pick up this person and come on out. And I was like,
No problem. Yeah, I just fucking...
Like, texting the lead actor, like, hey, where are you?
Are you up now? Yeah.
He texted me, like, 2 hours later, and he was like, ha, 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 because he knew.
God damn it.
And then he got to bed, he's like, are you okay? You're not okay. That's like, I don't know who I am at this point, you know?
Yo, but that's how stress is on us, though. Because I've done that before where I just showed up to set like an hour and a half early. But I've also been late to set before, too, because I misread a call sheet. And I'm like, where are you? And I'm like, oh, you guys said you needed me at 9. And it's like, no, call time's at 7. And I'm like, yay! You know, like, oh, I'm going to get fired. Great.
If there's anything you can, if it's your first time as an AD or as a director and you're going through the schedule and trying to figure out what's good, like, just set it and don't change it the night before, because they will inevitably go by the original one and not see the new one you set out. They just won't. Yeah. You know?
And that's exactly what I did. And I showed up to set and I just see Kelly just like laughing her ass off. And I'm just like, shut the fuck up. Like, she just like, ooh, somebody misread the call time. I'm like, it's not my fault that there's 7,000 emails. And I'm like, I only sleep for like 2 hours the night before. And I'm just like, what's an email? What am I reading? Who am I? You know?
What adds to the stress is because your phone is constantly like ding, 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 ding. And there's so much to go through that once, sometimes you just can't get it all. And you're like, okay, saw that, but you instantly forget it, you know? Yeah.
And that's the thing. It's like, I'm dangerously close to like, you know, throwing my phone out the window because some of the amount of text messages and phone calls I get is just like, yo, if this person calls me one more time, I'm a pop off. Like, it's not gonna be good.
My favorite part of filming of any kind, no matter where you are, like whether I'm just acting or if I'm actually like producer or something like that, if I'm like driving to a meeting or to a rehearsal or something, and I get all these texts and I'm like, can't talk, driving, you know? And then they're like, okay, cool, real quick, ba 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 ba. And it's like,
right. And they're like, oh yeah, I can talk to you for the next 20 minutes. And it's like, oh, I'm driving, bitch. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah, but they like call if it's an emergency. And there will be no call, just like 15 more texts. I'm like, okay, I'm not responding till I get there. I told you.
And hey, I know we talk highly of Christine, and I love Christine so much, but man, like every time I'm driving, she'll text me like, hey, do you have an ETA?
A sensor. Like, she knows the minute you're in the car behind the wheel, and that's when she texts.
Always.
Every time.
And she texts me, and then she gets to a point where she gets impatient that I don't text back because I am driving. And I'm like, you can call. Literally, I'll message her back saying, call me. And she's like, can't, on set. And I'm like, I'm driving. What do you want me to do? Like, I've done that. I've done it before where I had to pull over on the highway, like in Shreveport. Like, I'll just have to pull over on the highway because I needed to call Christine because she was sending me like 30,000 text messages. And it was like, I was like on my 10th hour on set with like 4 hours of sleep. And I'm like, Christine, like, I love you so much, but I'm going crazy. Like, one thing at a time.
day if you don't stop.
Right. Like, I'm going to go crown. I'm gonna pop off, and I don't want to go Oakland hood on you when I don't need to, you know? Like, I don't want to do that. I don't want to pop off. Please.
Or that she'll, like, send all that stuff, and then at the very end go, NVM, never mind, dot.
NVM. And when she sends that, I'm like, literally, I will respond with no NVM. I'm like, no NVM. No NVM. No NVM.
Amazing. No NVM. I don't.
We're discussing this now. Yeah, dude. I'm well, we're now clocking in at an hour and a half with this show. So
I feel like we're just getting started. How fast that went.
I know. And that's just what happens. But we gotta take this bad boy down for a landing at some point. So if you got anything you want to put in before we take off, take down, go for it. Anything you want to,
like, a plug?
Talk about? Yeah.
Do I have a plug right now? I don't think I have a plug. Everything is almost
your monologue. Follow Peyton Brewer on Instagram. Watch her monologues.
It's at Peyton Brewer. I'm complicated that way. But yeah. If you want to check in, come check it out. I appreciate it.
Check it out. I'm looking at questions. We got a pretty good amount of viewers, but no questions. What? Oh, actually, we do have a question.
Oh.
From Kelly. She says, well, here's a question. How does one give a director notes, or is it possible to give a director notes? That's a really good question. Peyton, is it possible to give director notes?
Well, I guess it depends on if you're coming from an acting perspective or like a producer. Right. I don't know what role. Kelly, if you're still on, could you specify what role? If you're an actor, I would say, I think it's well within reason to, if you feel like you're truly not being given anything. I think it's a professional thing to do, as long as you're respectful about it and just say, hey, I just wanted to let you know that I would, you know, really prefer a lot more feedback and, you know, whatever. I don't think there's anything wrong with that. I think if you're like a PA, probably not. You know?
I have a couple things to say about the director.
Ballsy of a person. Yes, I support it. As a producer, yes, because 9 times out of 10, you hired the director. So go for it. There are things that, you know, aren't being handled appropriately, it's well within your job description to say, hey, no, we're not doing that.
What the fuck is this all about? Yeah.
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 I think the thing we talked about earlier is, like, there's just no reason to be better. Even if you're at your wit's end, you can still say it in a direct yet respectful way, you know?
Absolutely. And just being respectful to each other, especially, like, I don't know, like, with how collaborative filmmaking is, I do wish people can experience filmmaking and the magic of filmmaking, because it is truly,
about a lot of the downsides today, but at the end of the day, we're still both like, we love this more than anything, and that's just the way it is.
I mean, that's why I quit my barista job. That's why I quit retail. That's why I quit my past career, because I knew that being a filmmaker is my self-worth.
Right.
And me just making coffee and managing a bunch of people, that's not my worth. Like, I mean, nothing against retail. Like, anybody who is all about retail and being a manager and that's their career, fucking absolutely, go for it. But it's just, unfortunately for me, it was a dead end. And I didn't understand it was a dead end until I arrived here in Texas and realized that, oh, I can be part of a film industry, an independent filmmaking industry. And
that's so funny that you came from Orange County and landed here and was like, oh, well, yeah.
And I came from the Bay Area. I mean, like, and the Bay Area was like, had like a filmmaking, like a community there, but nothing compared to LA. And I lived in Pasadena for 2 months and Orange County. Yeah. But I mean, and I worked in Orange County and yeah, like I enjoy it, but I don't know. It's just LA. What I love about Austin, here's what I love about Austin. Austin is the film community here is so intimate and so close that I feel like more times than not, if I'm on a set here in Austin, I'm 90% more likely to work with somebody who I worked with before. And that is the dopest thing ever. Because in LA, you're working with so many people and people are coming from everywhere, from all points of the country or even the world. And that's beautiful and that's awesome. Like that's what LA is there for. But Austin is like, I don't know, it's very passionate. It's a very passionate bunch of people who are just willing to make dope art for the fuck of it, you know? Yeah. And they're not waiting for permission or they're not waiting for a phone call or anything, you know? They're just doing it.
Absolutely.
So yeah, I love it. I love filmmaking. I love movies. And Peyton, let's make movies forever together.
Forever and ever. Never stop.
Forever and ever. And then more after that in the afterlife.
Yes. Yes. It's a deal. It's done.
Peyton, thank you for being part of the show. Thank you for joining in.
Thank you so much. I had so much fun.
I appreciate you and I appreciate you, Facebook. Thank you guys for tuning in. I love yous. That's been the show. It's been episode 11. You guys, 11 weeks of doing this show. Thank you guys. Thank you guys for sticking around. Thank you guys for engaging with us, asking the questions from the very beginning, you know? Thank you guys so much.